First, before we start, I need to set aside prayer. God, help me set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big work, what's best for me, what's best for others. Help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your truth. And especially help me tonight to carry the message. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. For those Saturday morning, 9:15, we're going to cover, start on the 11th step. We're going to cover what we do at night and how we do prayer meditation. We're only going to probably spend three meetings on just two pages. It's such powerful stuff. Maybe four. And on Sunday night, we finished Bill's story, and it was great. Anybody there? It was good. Very powerful. How the man went to the hospital and how he changed, and then how he had that spiritual transformation so that he couldn't help but give this thing away, and we're here today. And then we're going to start. There's a solution. Joe and Charlie said page 17 is the page that everyone has to understand, especially the new person. We'll be reading that Sunday night, so join us. Tonight we've been plowing through the big book, and I don't want to tell you, it's taken us quite a while to get to page 64, 66, maybe a year, I think, with all the steps we took and carry this message. And we're going to cover 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs that have changed my life, probably more than anything I've ever read in my life. And these pages, I hardly ever hear read at meetings. When I hear a lot of four-step workshops on resentment, and I hear a lot about the first three columns, and then I hear about the mistakes and the fourth column, but you don't hear very many, if any, on these two pages. And these two pages are something that I use all the time. And it says resentment is the number one offender. And we talked about that. I did a whole meeting on what the spiritual malady is. And then last week we looked at resentment, how it separates us from God, right? And how we can't be loving and angry at the same time. And God can't direct our lives when we have resentments, right? And we looked at the first three columns, which are what we were angry at, principles, institutions, and things. And I mentioned that all you have to do is go through your life and look at almost anybody you ever met and decide if they bothered you. And some people bother you a lot. There's a lot of deep-seated resentments. Look at your anger. And column two is what we think they did. A lot of times it may be true what you wrote, but it's really not true the way you pictured it. It seems true, but it's not. And then we talked about the third column in great detail, how we're threatened, we don't get angry. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that somehow, if somebody leaves dishes in the sink, I heard about that today, somebody was carrying on a meeting, how somebody left dishes in the sink and it still bothered them 2 weeks later. Well, great, good job. How we're threatened whenever we're angry. Well, what could be threatened by leaving dishes in the sink? It threatens my pride because I'm so wonderful. How can somebody leave dishes in the sink in my house? And then my self-esteem, you see how crazy it is? But we talked about the three instincts of life, the social instinct, the material instinct, and the sex instinct. We all have sex instinct. We wouldn't have human beings. We wouldn't have more people if we didn't. And they're good and God-given, but we've twisted them to get somehow self-seeking to make us feel better. We all have material instincts or else we wouldn't have survived the mastodons and the cold weather and all that stuff. We have to have material, we have to have food, we have to have shelter, clothing. But we've distorted that in our mind and we decide what we need in those areas to be happy. And then when we don't get it, we get angry. Anybody relate to that? Then the most is the social instinct, which is the companionship, wanting to be respected, wanting to be loved, wanting approval, our ambitions, and then that's our self-esteem, how we feel about ourselves based on how other people see us. And for alcoholics, our self-esteem is really distorted. And then our pride, which is our killer. our self-centered pride kills us. It's not we're proud that we got 100 on the exam. It's our self-centered pride on how we see ourselves and how we're so important and how we need to be related to in the world and how people need to give us the respect we're due all the time. They say that we have a coin that we carry around if we're alcoholics. Anybody have this coin? On one side it says fear and the other it says pride. And then if you carry that coin around, you're going to get a letter someday from God. And it's usually, people usually throw it away. They think it's junk mail. But it says, good job. You've completely screwed up your life. Way to go. Fire yourself. And it's signed God. And it sounds silly, but that's really what the big book's about. Firing ourselves, getting a new director. I just went through the third step with two guys tonight. And it's pretty clear if you read page 62 what you need to do. And if you you know that because you read 60 to 61, which tells you what a miserable human being is. It's very similar to Romans. It tells you in the first three chapters of Romans, I hope nobody's offended, you don't have to like Romans or read it or care, but what it says is that we're all miserable. We're all a mess. None of us are good. And then it tells you in the next two chapters how you can get right with God. And basically, when we come in, we're self-centered, and we're all a mess. Nobody in AA comes here isn't a self-centered mess, and how we get right with God. So we're starting on page 66, and it says it's plain. That means it's obvious. And you've done the three columns now, so you're reading this. It's plain that a life, your life, which includes deep resentments, and I wrote, which resentments are deep? You know, because we pole vault over mouse turds. And we can make anything into a deep resentment. To me, a deep resentment may be one you keep for more than a day. A little resentment might be a few hours. A minimal resentment might be 10 minutes. But the deep ones really affect us. And they lead only to futility and happiness. So a life which includes deep resentments, but we also have less deep resentments because we're selfish and we're angry all the time, right? And we're threatened all the time, leads only to futility and unhappiness. Now, that's not good. By the way, a futile and unhappy life is not pretty. And if you look at your life honestly, when you come in here and you look back, you see how you had these resentments, this life run on self-will, really was a mess. And there's regrets, right? And you can see that you were unhappy and how you harmed people. Now here's a key line. To the precise extent, exactly how you permit these. Now notice what they're saying here. I permit the resentments. I didn't have to get angry at all. I permit them, and to the extent that I permit them, I squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. And I wrote, how many hours, days, and years have we squandered? I squandered so much time in anger. And I didn't see it. I saw it as fear, really. But it was all resentment. And to the precise extent that I permit these. So who's the culprit here? It's not the resentment or whatever they did. It's me. I permitted these. If I didn't permit these things, then I wouldn't have squandered hours. Anybody sitting there in the basement mad at somebody and they're not even in the room? For something they did the day before or a year before. They're home watching Big Bang and you're sitting there executing them in their mind. You know, it was so insane. But remember, they said our life was the only one we knew. We couldn't see that it was injurious. We couldn't see the truth from the false. So this is the way we live. I squandered hours. So I have a rule. I don't always remember, but I don't want to squander any more time with anger or fear. So I really try to cut it off at the pass, especially fear. But with the alcoholic, everybody here said they're an alcoholic, right? Right, Norm? Yes. whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. Does anybody hope for that? You better. Because remember, if you're an alcoholic, you have a disease that what's the only thing you can have that's going to conquer it? A spiritual experience. If you don't have a spiritual experience, you can't conquer alcoholism, and the spirit conquers it, not you. So we want to maintain and grow it. So we need to get it, and then we need to grow it. This business of resentment is infinitely grave. Now, a lot of you might not realize, but infinitely grave is bad. It's not just grave, which is fatal. It's infinitely grave. Now, alcoholics don't like to read, and they don't like to read carefully, right? So they put this line in here in case you didn't understand what they're saying. It says, we found it is fatal. Do you get it? So anything between fatal and infinitely grave is what the resentments cause. And what they've told you already is that you've permitted them. You've permitted these things to happen that are killing you. And why? For when harboring such feelings. Now, I heard a speaker, I was thinking, it was about 15 years ago that I started listening to AA speakers, and I heard some really good people talk about these pages. Harbor. A harbor is a safe place for a boat during a storm. So that's why we have harbors. And I put my resentments in a harbor in my mind because I didn't want anybody to take them away from me. Isn't that crazy? So I gave these things that were killing me safe harbor. Not only were they killing me, but I protected them. I said, no, I don't want to get rid of that one. And when I have these, harboring these feelings, these negative emotions, I shut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Shut off from God's power, from the light. They use the analogies of lightness and darkness in this book all the time. We're in the darkness, we enter the light. We build a spiritual structure through which we're going to walk a free man. We walk from the darkness into the light. I'm blocked from the sunlight of the Spirit. Now, that's another thing I might suggest, that when you shut yourself off from the sunlight of the Spirit, you're in bad shape because you have no power in your life. And if you have no power in your life, you have no power over alcohol, right? And then alcohol has power over you. We don't want to shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit anymore. Now, they tell you why. The insanity of alcohol returns. What does it mean, the insanity of alcohol returns? When you're shut off from the sunlight of the Spirit, a drink doesn't seem like a bad idea. Well, it won't hurt me this time. I've been sober 60 months. I can quit any time. I was making too much of this. I'm not going to go to any more meetings. I don't want to listen to that guy talk anymore. He's driving me crazy. You know, it goes on and on. And we drink. And then if we drink, we die. But there are other ways of dying if you shut yourself off from the sunlight of the Spirit. You die spiritually. How did you like living before you came here? I think Justin said it really well. He's a different person now, right? And you see things differently. And you react differently. And you don't want to be the person you were. And so the whole deal is to keep the sunlight of the Spirit in you. Now, this is tied in to page 84 where it says we've entered the world of the Spirit. So when you've done the fourth step and you've removed the resentment and then you remove the fears and you look at your harms and relationships, and then you do step five and admit your character defects, and then six and seven, you ask God to remove them, and you're making amends, then you enter into the sunlight of the Spirit. Now, that's a good place to be. You know how you know? Because everybody loves those nine-step promises, right? Mm-hmm. Well, those are the promises when you enter the world of the Spirit. Now, what are the promises if you stay in the world of the Spirit? Those are the recovered promises that we covered, I think, last Saturday or the Saturday before, which is how we react when we're in fit spiritual condition. When we see alcohol, we recoil just from a hot flame. We're not fighting everybody and everything. Sanity is returned. And so that's the deal. So the insanity of return, alcohol returns if you're shut off from it. And if you're in the sunlight of the Spirit and the world of the Spirit, you won't drink. So what does it mean to be a recovered alcoholic? It means you've entered the world of the Spirit and you're there. Now, if you leave the world of the Spirit, you can be unrecovered. So recovered is a fragile thing. It depends on a daily reprieve based on your fit spiritual condition. And that's what we studied last Saturday on page 85. You see how it all ties together? So is anybody convinced that resentment may be a bad thing? Mm-hmm. It may be, anger may be bad. Now, and they tell you it's your fault. Good job. So it says, if you want to live, anybody want to live? Everybody raise your hand. We all want to live. We have to be free of anger. Now, I had somebody pound the desk and say, I don't get angry, and storm out of the meeting one time. But free of anger doesn't mean that you don't get the emotion, but you don't want to be in bondage to it. It doesn't mean you're not going to get bothered by people or things. Of course we do. We're alcoholics. We're good at that. But we want to be free of it dominating and harboring us and blocking us. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. Brainstorm was not being a genius. When they wrote this book, it was defined as rage. Any ragers in here? No? Okay. Well, maybe the wrong, it may not be AA. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, questionable, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. Now, I heard that, you know, you've all heard resentment is me taking poison hoping you'll die. Think about that. Is that insane? You're executing them in your mind. You're downstairs in their home having a great evening. How's that working? It's insane. So you have to be free of anger if you're going to live. And what they mean by living is if you're going to live in the real world with God and have a life of joy and peace and service. You're going to have a useful life. You're going to be, because you can still be alive and miserable, but are you going to live if you're going to live successfully? And then, of course, you can die from drinking, right? And we have a lot of, most people today aren't pure alcoholics, so we have alcoholic addicts or whatever that's called. It's just addiction to things that change how I feel. And those things will kill us. And we use and drink over anger, right? We don't like the way we feel. So here's the key. Nobody reads this. It says we turn back to the list. Well, now what's the list? The list you just made of three columns. So here's the question. Ask somebody, what's the key to your future? They come to AA. Here's the key to your future is the first three columns of the resentment inventory. It's the key to your future. If you want to have a future, you have to have done the list. And now they're going to tell you how it's the key. Getting the picture? If anger's a killer, and you've done the first three columns, and you looked at your resentments, what you thought they did, and how you were threatened, now you're going to take this list, and that just that simple list is the key to your whole future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. So you've just written it out, and you've put all these things down, and this is what you think, right? Now you're going to look at it from a different angle, because the way you were looking at it is, what did these people do? Why they made you angry, right? And what was threatened? You're going to begin to see that the world and the people in it dominated you. Now, what I learned from my four step is how much anger I'd had my whole life. I knew it. And it wasn't rage. It was just people bothered me, and they were always wrong. And oh my God, all these people I met my whole life. I probably had 300 names. They're all the same thing. And why was I angry at most of them? Because I felt inferior to them. And so I got angry at them because they threatened my self-esteem. It's so ridiculous. But I was angry. I wasted a lot of time on anger. And a lot of people bothered me. And I certainly wasn't practicing love. And love your neighbors yourself. And as you wish others to do to you, you do to them, right? And I wasn't loving God with all my heart and soul and all my mind. I was loving myself and what I thought I needed. And anybody else have a long resentment list? I mean, it was all sorts of silly things. I didn't like certain ball teams. They bothered me, you know, because it reflected on me. And if they beat the team I liked, then I was no good. You see how insane that is? Anybody else ever have that? All right. I guess this isn't a good meeting. I'm going to move on. But the world and its people dominated me. It wasn't that they bothered me. they dominated me because I was subjected to them. They were in charge of my life. You give people power when you get angry at them. You give people power when you get afraid of them. You don't want to do that anymore. In that state, in the state where people are dominating us, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, a lot of times it's not true. What you do when you go through a lot of four steps is, when you do a lot of four steps, you keep doing your four step a lot. And you see how the wrongdoing of others wasn't even really true. It's how we saw it. Fancied or real had the power to kill. So they've threatened your life like three or four times on this page. One, two, three, four times they've threatened that we're going to die. The wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to kill. Anybody agree with all this? And here's a key line in the big book. It's a question. How can we escape? Isn't that a good question? Mm-hmm. How can you escape from dying, from all this anger, and having people dominate you your whole life, and being offended from God and separated from God? So it would be good to read on, wouldn't it? It says, we saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? And I wrote, the resentments were mastering me. See, you think you're in charge when you're getting angry, but no, you've given power to that person or thing that you're angry at. You don't have any power anymore. They have power over you. And to the extent that you do that, the extent of the power you give them, the more miserable you get. So how can we escape? They must be mastered, but how? So now they're going to tell you how. Don't you think this is important, to know how to master anger? It's right in the big book. We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. We had no power, right? So this was their course. They're going to tell you what they did. Now, you can do whatever you want. If you have the way to master your anger, go ahead and do it. I didn't. And I don't know if you do, but this works. What they're going to tell me they did is really powerful, and it's about 10 or 11 lines. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Wow. Now, a lot of people like that. Oh, yeah, they were bad. But spiritually sick to me means that they were human beings. They had their own personality. They did whatever they did. And some people are spiritually sick. They're self-centered just like us. And the people who wronged us, they wronged us in our minds, right? And they're perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms, we didn't like what they did, and we wrote it down. And the way these disturbed us, remember, we get disturbed. Now, we're in the 12 and 12, it says if we're disturbed, there's something wrong with us, not them. But we didn't know that. We're only on page 67, and we're not on step 10 yet. But we're going to learn that. The way these disturbed me. Now, who allowed them to disturb you? This is another point. How did these people, did they wake up and say, I'm going to disturb Michael? No. They don't even probably know they disturbed me. Now, some of them may have said they did, and they did. But I was the one that allowed myself to get disturbed. I don't have to stay angry, and I don't have to stay disturbed. Now, here's the key. Nobody likes this one. They, like me, were sick too. What does that really mean? It means I was a self-centered person. They can be self-centered. We're all self-centered to some extent. We all live in our own little worlds. We're going to kind of conflict with everybody and everything, and we're going to be bothered. But they were sick like us. And you know, the other thing is I was in meetings for years till I realized, it hadn't dawned on me because I'm sicker than others, that I'm probably on a lot of people's resentment list. I may be on one tonight. One of you may be angry at me. Get over it. I'm going to tell you how to get over it right now. If you're listening, here's how you get over it, too. They, like ourselves, were sick, too. You see, we're all the same. This is a powerful line. It means they are who they are. Now, I've got people that I've worked with, and we all have these one person we're living with, and they tend to bother us at times. So we just say, so-and-so, I just say, Patty's Patty, and they'll say, Julie's Julie, and Jesse's Jesse, and That's the, and the, and Patty's saying Michael's Michael, and they're saying, you know, Lloyd's this and that. You get it? We're all human beings. We have to accept that none of us are better than others, and we all have our problems. And I wrote, all human beings, who is judging the wrongs? You know, I'm the one. They are who they are. And that's a key thing. They are who they are. I am who I am. Now, I want to do better. But I'm not talking about me doing better. I'm talking about them. I can't change them if they disturb me. Some people are really, really mean and evil. Fine. But I have to see them as spiritually ill, and I have to change the way I see them. Now, here's the prayers. We have four prayers for people who are spiritually ill and who bother us. I'm going to ask God that prayer. I'm going to say, God, help me show blank the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully, notice the word cheerfully, grant a sick friend. So I want to cheerfully ask God to help me practice tolerance. They are who they are. I have pity because I'm sad that they're spiritually ill or they're bothered, and patient with them. Now, I can do that, can't I? Now, if I want to be free of anger, I'm going to do that right away. Doesn't matter what they did, blah, blah, blah. Now, when a person offended, we're going to say to ourselves, and we're going to say to ourselves with God, this is a sick person. How can I be helpful to him? So I'm changing my attitude right away. They're not well. They are who they are. How can I have love, tolerance, and pity and patience for this person? God, give me that. God, how can I be helpful to them? So you're going from being angry to how you can help them. And you can't help anybody if you're angry at them. And if you see them as people who need help, how can I be helpful? Well, one way you could be helpful is keep your mouth shut. You know, one way you could be helpful is not to react to them. One thing you can be helpful is to maybe walk away. Don't send the text. I think text has contributed more resentments than alcohol. Anyway, I'm getting off here. And so you have the two prayers. Anybody can do that, right? You say, God, this is who they are. I don't pay a lot of attention to spiritually sick. I mean, they're just human beings. We all fall short of the glory of God. And how I can change the way I see them, the way God sees them, how can I be helpful? Then here's the key. This is a very difficult line to understand. God saved me from being angry. How hard is that to do? Now notice the words. It doesn't say pray for the other person. You hear that on Freedom from Bondage, and that may be very helpful. I don't have, that may be great. But what we're doing here is I want to be free from my anger at them, and I want to see them differently. I want to practice tolerance, pity, and patience. I want to be helpful to them, and I want God to save me from being angry. All that we read, How We're Dying, on page 66, I need God to save me from my anger. It's so simple. God save me from being angry at who? Now, if you're bothered by somebody and you start doing this and you keep saying this, after a while you say, I don't want to get disturbed. I don't want to have to say the four prayers. Right? It just becomes automatic. I'm wrong. But God save me from being angry. Now, if somebody really bothers you, just keep saying, God save me from being angry. Thy will be done. So three things. Immediately I do. Give me love, pity, tolerance, and patience for this person. They're a human being. You know, they may need help, blah, blah, blah. How can I be helpful to them? And God, save me from being angry, because I'm the one that's dying. Now, we avoid retaliation or argument. Now, what does that mean? We always want to tell them how they're wrong. We always want to tell them, you know, how they need to change. They're not interested. They don't want to know what we think. And we avoid retaliation, or you don't have to say anything. You don't argue with people who don't want to change. Now, they ask your advice and they ask you something, you might say it, and you have to pray before you say anything. And how you can practice, when they ask you, you say, I want to practice love, tolerance, pity, and patience when I talk to this person. I want to talk to them from a position of loving, not hating them. So you're changing your whole personality now. You wouldn't treat people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. Remember, being helpful to others, serving God and others, is what it's all about. And I can't be helpful to anybody if I'm angry. Now, the scriptures is all about loving. and being loving. And I've been studying it, and it doesn't mean that, you know, you want to go and kiss everybody. It means you want to be helpful to them. You want to be able to reach out and be helpful to service, because we're all God's kids. How can you serve each other? And that's the fundamental of the big book. And it's fundamental to having positive relationships. And now it says, I can't be helpful to all people. Isn't that true? And in fact, a lot of people don't want help, and they get even more upset when you try to help them. And so you have to be careful. That's why you have sponsors. When you're angry at somebody, you talk to them. Ask them how you should handle the situation, but you go to God. Now it says we cannot be helpful to people, but here's the key. God, show me how to be kind and tolerant view of everybody. Every time I'm angry, I want a kind and tolerant view of them. I want to change my view. Now, what I wrote down in the first three columns is how they were such a mess and they did all these horrible things. And now I'm praying that it doesn't matter what they did, because the second column is really irrelevant. How can I have a kind and tolerant view of these people? They're not well. They need help. Give me love. So four prayers. Tolerance, pity, and patience. How can I be helpful to them? God, save me from being angry. And God, give me a kind and tolerant view of each and every one. I guarantee if you make this your way of life, you will be much less disturbed and you'll be a lot happier. And your relationships will be better. It doesn't mean they're going to change, but you'll change. I can't emphasize enough how these five paragraphs have changed my life. So I don't want to harbor any feelings anymore. I don't want to keep them there. Now we're going to read on Saturday how every night we look at our resentments and we ask, have we resolved all that night, so we don't carry them into the next day? But that's step 10 and 11. Steps 4 is where you're looking at all this crap you've been carrying around. Now why do you want to get it out of your head? So God can direct your thinking. And now they're telling you how this list is the key to your future, because you're going to look at this list and you're going to practice these prayers and you're going to practice forgiveness of everybody. It doesn't mean, and I'll end with this, that you excuse people's behavior. It's not about excusing, it's about forgiving. And the forgiveness is for me. Because when I forgive, then I'm close to God. And when I'm angry, I'm not close to God. And God forgives me if I forgive them. And it's about the relationship with God. And nothing blocks my relationship with God more than my anger. Then the other thing I've learned, so that wasn't the last thing I said. Another thing I've learned is that if I'm in a bad situation, it's because I didn't bring love into it. If I'm having a bad interaction, I didn't come in with love. I came in with Michael. I left God out. And so I have to stop sometimes and bring love in and stop Michael. And that's what these prayers are all about. So I hope this was helpful. And we'll open it up. Thank you.